Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
They are who we thought they were.
Yes, we now have our Super Bowl teams. The championship round is finished. We now know who is going to the Super Bowl from both sides. We're going to be getting into all of that. Everyone probably already knows this. If you're listening to this podcast, you are a fan of football and you know who has won. But we are Next Fan Up, the podcast for the fans, by the fans. My name is Mark Sitko. I am the Sunday night host, and I also am the Eagles super fan. The Eagles are very far from a Super Bowl currently, especially with our new coach. I don't think we're going to get to one for a very long time. But regardless, two teams are really excited tonight. Let's start by talking about the AFC, where we have Denver Broncos winning the game. Kicking off this game, I have two super fans with me tonight. I have Neil, who is our super fan from across the ocean. He is the super fan for the Washington Redskins. How are you doing, Neil?
Hey, Mark, I'm doing great, and that was fantastic to get an Eagles new coach reference in there right at the start in the championship weekend. Good job.
Thank you. I just, my sadness is so strong, I can't even tell you. We'll get into that eventually, maybe at the end of this podcast or later down the line. But everything I think about, it all starts with how bad my new coach is. But regardless, the other super fan I have with me is Justin, who is the super fan for the Seahawks. He's a brand new super fan. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing really, really good. You know, I think, though, for every Eagles reference, I'm going to have to drop a Hawks one of my own just to keep it balanced.
Nice. That's great. And you guys are a much better team. You deserve it far more than I do. I think we'll talk about this, but I think the Seahawks could have beaten either of these AFC teams. But we'll get into that. I think that the NFC is much stronger personally this year than the AFC. But we'll get into that in a second, especially with the champions right now coming out of the NFC. It's just powerhouse. But let's start with the AFC game. So we had a game earlier today. Neil, you had a chance to watch this game. What did you see? To kind of break it down for us.
Thanks, Mark. I think what we saw were two very evenly matched teams. I don't think we saw two of the best teams in the NFL. I think you're right with your comment there about Seattle. And I'd maybe even throw Green Bay into that mix there for with Arizona and Carolina for being the four best teams in the NFL. Anyway, we saw two very evenly matched teams. And really, I think it came down to something that I've been talking about all week long, which was the home field advantage and the fantastic crowd behind the Denver Broncos. And secondly, we saw that the team who had the best unit out of the two teams, which was the Denver defense, was probably the unit which, in the end, won the game. Got to wonder just, you know, how good is Tom Brady? He's playing behind that offensive line, which was basically a turnstile for most of the game, especially on the outside pass rush with Ware and Von Miller. And he just could not get that team moving. What he's done to get the team to the AFC Championship game, I think, is quite incredible. However, as we know, Denver are through. And there are a couple of points there, I think, which New England, well, if I'm a New England fan, and maybe Pod Vader's thinking the same tonight, I would question, and as a question I put to you two guys maybe right now, why didn't they kick a field goal in the fourth quarter to bring the game back to, what, I would bring it back to within 5 points? And
yes.
Secondly, the NFL wanted to make the extra point a viable part of the game. But you've got to wonder, you see those guys on the field kicking the crap out of each other for 60 minutes, and basically the game's come down to a missed extra point. And I'm not sure that sits comfortably with me, and I was interested to know what you guys thought about that.
What do you think, Justin? Yeah, how do you feel about both of those things?
You know, as far as the extra point thing goes, I've been pretty mixed on it all year. You know, putting the foot back in football, I kind of like the concept of it, because obviously, you know, the role of kicking has diminished. But as soon as the season started, I just thought to myself, yeah, it's fun now, and you look at there's a couple misses here and there, but, you know, if my team arguably loses largely from an outcome like that, how am I going to feel about it then? And I don't know. I mean, you know, this game was such a battle. I mean, it was really, really just a terrific game. I mean, it's about the most exciting, mostly punt game you could ever watch, as funny as that sounds. And to have something like that, you know, kind of weigh so heavy on it, yeah, I don't know. That just doesn't feel right. Now in regards to not taking those field goals, you know, if you heard me on the show talking a couple weeks ago, when my Seahawks lost and they had an opportunity to take 3 points at the half, I really, really do not like seeing coaches leave points on the board. You know, the last 5 minutes or so of the game, Tom Brady had the ball in his hands basically nonstop. And, you know, there were a couple great fourth down stops on the part of Denver that could have been easy threes. And with the way the New England defense was playing, you know, if I can take 3 points and make it like, I think at that point it would have been like a 5-point game with 4 minutes left, I'm pretty confident I'm going to get the ball back, especially the way Rob Gronkowski was playing. I think he was, with the possible exception of Von Miller, the best player on the field. I mean, he was really, really borderline unstoppable all day. So I really, really disagree with that decision-making there. And I'm curious to see how the media kind of treats that. You know, typically everybody looks at Bill Belichick as this, like, super evil genius, which, full credit, he absolutely is. I mean, you know, he is the mad genius behind one of the greatest runs in any sports ever. I want to see if he's going to get a pass. I want to see if he's going to be taken to task for that, because that is largely on him.
Yeah, I think the two things answer each other for me, in the idea that if he had kicked that field goal, we wouldn't be asking if the extra points should matter. You know what I mean? Like, if he had kicked that field goal, got the ball back, and then went down and scored the touchdown that they did score, they would have won this game. And so I think it is on Belichick, and I don't blame that block kick for them losing this game. I think this game, they lost this game many, many times over. And it, for me, the Patriots were lucky to be in it. The only reason they were in it is that Peyton Manning is crippled and, like, wasn't able to, like, many times put them away. There were multiple opportunities, I felt, for Peyton Manning to just score a touchdown. You're up by two scores and this game's over, and he couldn't do it. So, yeah, I don't think of it that way. I think it was really bad for Belichick not to kick that. And then that extra point was blocked, right? To be clear, it was not a miss. It actually got deflected off somebody's hand. So that's a play made by Denver. Once again, Patriots pointing out, as Patrick and Pod love to laugh at me, that special teams don't matter. Oh, they do. And that you just lost the NFL, you just lost the AFC Championship on special teams because you didn't kick the ball well high enough and the dude got up and blocked it. And I think that that's why I like the rule, is because it's way harder to block a kick from the 2-yard line. It is really, it becomes, you know, obviously the further you move out, the more the trajectory has to come down and people can actually get up that high to get it. So I just give Denver full credit for that. I think that, yeah, I think that's full credit there. Belichick made a mistake by not kicking that field goal that was on him. And yeah, he just was being cocky. If anything, I thought he thought his team was going to do it. They were going to score, tie the game up, and then be able to win it that way. But I think what you're pointing out is very valid. If he had kicked the field goal and then just gotten the ball back as they did easily, he could have gone down and won that game. Yeah, very, very interesting.
I'd like to kind of pose this question to the both of you and kind of gauge, see what you think. Do you think this game was more a matter of Denver winning the game or New England losing the game? You know, where does credit or blame really, really rest in this situation?
I totally love the question, because I want to just to add an extra layer to that same question before you jump in, Neil, is people are always going to act like Brady is the superior quarterback. And to be clear, today, Peyton Manning, with a crippled spine, played better than Brady, and he outplayed him. And the numbers back it up. The Patriots, Brady was like, wait, let me just pull up Brady's numbers here. They're atrocious, but the biggest atrocious number, did you see their third down efficiency? Brady was 2 for 15 on third down. One of those that he got, he ran for 10 yards. He only threw on third down 1 of 14. Like, that's a good defense, but I think the Carolina Panthers are a great defense. You know, like, Denver's pretty good. Yes. The Panthers are dominant. They are just rolling through teams in the playoffs. And Denver has a, I don't know, I think it's a good defense, but I think there is some blame on Brady. I think he played a horrible game. I think he choked in an AFC championship. And I think Peyton is going to go down, that they're going to always, he's never going to be able to add up because he doesn't have those Super Bowls, but he also doesn't have Belichick. And I would take Peyton all day over Brady. And this is a perfect example. He, a crippled version of Peyton outplayed Manning, outplayed Brady today. Hands down. 2 touchdowns for Manning, 2 interceptions for the cheater. Ah, that's where I stand on it all. And I'm celebrating like the end of Star Wars because, I mean, like, the evil empire fell today, and that is awesome. And then, sadly, the Super Bowl is going to suck because I don't think that the Broncos have a chance against the defense and offense that Carolina brings. But, yeah, so sorry, guys, to go off on all that. Neil, what are your thoughts there? Was it on Brady? Was it on the Pats? Is it all credit to Denver? What do you think?
Well, I was thinking how would it have looked if Brady was playing for the Broncos and Manning was playing for the Patriots? And I do think if that had been the case, then the Broncos probably would have won by at least, 10, 15 points, maybe 20 points.
Really? If Peyton Manning didn't have Gronkowski, what just give Peyton on. Gronk? Go ahead. Sorry.
Have a drink, Mark. Have a drink. take a break. Take a pause for the cause. Is that what you say over there? I think this game was less about the two quarterbacks and more about the Denver defense and the New England offensive line. I wouldn't have seen Manning standing up to that Denver pass rush for more than just.
But
a
wait,
wasn't
plays. He sacked? He was sacked a bunch as well, though, right? Like, I thought Manning was under a lot of pressure today too. He was like, the A-gap blitzes were all over him. Like, you don't think that they were both under a lot of pressure today?
I don't think Manning was under as much pressure than Brady. I mean, Von Miller had, 2.5 sacks? He had 4 hits.
Tom Brady has 4 sacks for 18 loss. Peyton Manning had 3 sacks for 31 loss. So, I mean, yeah, I don't know if there's much of a difference there in actually the pressure.
Well, it's not just about the sacks, though, is it? It's about the number of times he was pressured, he was hit, knocked to the ground.
I'll just point out, Peyton took long sacks and didn't throw interceptions. Brady decided to throw interceptions. You know what I mean? And that's a huge 2 interceptions. Brady, without that fumble, Brady was unable to drive whatsoever. No, like for the first half of the game, you know? Like Brady to me was doing nothing.
How much of it is down to the offensive line?
I don't know. It's hard, but I mean, it's hard. I understand. I just don't think of either of those offensive lines being super impressive. I know that they're clearly the Brady's is horrible. I got it. But I don't know. I hear you. I hear you. But Brady has incredible receivers. And according to the magic of Pod and Patrick, he can get the ball out of his hands in 2 seconds. Well, clearly he can't when his dudes are covered, you know? Like, Brady's not the magical person.
No, I mean, whenever you have a pass rush like that coming at you and you take away the first read, which they managed to do a number of times with Edelman and Gronk, take one of them out of it, whoever the read was, get them covered. Time he got to look for the second read, he's got Von Miller in his face, hasn't he? So it was
Let's talk a little bit about what that Denver defense did, because I thought it was really, really well done. You know, a name that doesn't come up enough, I think, is Wade Phillips. And Wade Phillips is an elite defensive coordinator. Not a good defensive coordinator, an elite defensive coordinator. Lousy head coach. Hopefully nobody ever calls on him to be a head coach again. But historically he hasn't done well against Tom Brady, but you look at what they did this game. They were bringing a 3 or 4-man pass rush. I mean, they were getting home with minimal pass rushers and just filling the backfield with defensive backs. And, you know, I think this was a case where – you know, I don't want to take anything away from Tom Brady and Bill Belichick, except I do because I don't like them. In this case, Belichick was outcoached. Everybody and their mother knew that New England just wasn't going to run. They could not be bothered to run. As a team, 17 attempts for 44 yards. As a team. And
yeah,
so
Brady was their best runner. Yeah, Brady averaged 4 yards a run. No one else averaged over 2.5. Yeah, so yeah, Brady
That's
was
right.
by far their best running back today.
Yeah, I mean, Peyton Manning would have been one of the top rushers on New England. Like, that's how pathetic he was.
No, for sure.
We had the benefit over here of having Mark Schlereth on the commentary here in the United Kingdom. And he was just doing his nut the entire time about the point he just made there, Justin, about them basically rushing three, sometimes four, but mainly three in passing situations and dropping everybody else and still getting pressure on Brady.
When you do that, I mean, the Patriots, you know, they've got a good lineup of pass catchers between obviously Gronk, Edelman, James White, who's a running back, but in name only, really, for the most part, Amendola, Bolden. I mean, you know, they would put a bunch of guys out there to catch passes, and you would still have Edelman like double covered and like safety over the top on top of Gronk, and there's no way to throw the ball. So you know, you're trying to do these quick 1 or 2 second throws. And, you know, there's nobody open right away. And by the time you hit that second tick, you know, DeMarcus Ware has got Tom Brady by the back and he's doing a little pirouette and spinning at the ground and like kind of chucking an incomplete pass. Masterful defensive effort, I think.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I think Mark made a good point about Brady just being off tonight. Somehow something was wrong there. Every time he was going deeper down the field, he was throwing to this guy White. Who was getting covered by a linebacker, and he just could not make that play. It must have been at least three times White either dropped it or was like a yard away from him. That was very frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. And don't get me wrong, Brady is an amazing quarterback. I just think I'm very frustrated by I always hate when these people are put up on a pedestal and never challenged. And I think Brady is one of those guys that it's like, he's clearly the best ever. And it's like, no, when I look at Peyton, when I think of the two change the game and the way I watch a quarterback, Peyton Manning is truly remarkable. Brady is a great clutch, like kind of game manager who has the best coach of all time. Peyton Manning never had a good coach once. Like he still doesn't have great coaches behind him. And so it's just I've always been defending Peyton. I know he's never going to reach. I mean, even if he wins the Super Bowl, which he probably won't, he'll only have what, half of the Super Bowls Tom Brady has. And I mean, his spine is literally cracking right now, probably while he's like celebrating. I mean, he's so But it's just I thought it was an amazing story today what Peyton did to see him when no one thought they were going to win. He was making deep throws. He was pulling things off that was just so impressive to me. The only real bad play I thought Peyton had in the entire game, those long sacks were not great, and he couldn't punch it in a couple times. But the only really mistake he made was that his backward pass, which was so marginal and on the line, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was called correctly in the end, but, I mean, that was not a huge mistake, and that was the only thing he did. And the only way Brady could get a touchdown was to get the ball on the 20 or something, the 22.
The
Can we mention? Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say that the backward pass is quite an unusual thing. So no, I don't really put that on Manning. You know, that was one of those things you see so rarely in the NFL.
Totally,
it was
a great defensive play. They got to him fast enough. He had to get at it. He had to get it out of his hand before his drop was complete. So the angle was weird. It's a great play defensively. Don't get me wrong, but you couldn't put it on Peyton. That was a great defensive play.
No. As much as we're going to hear over the news coverage over the next few weeks just how great the Denver defense was, I think it's worth pointing out that actually New England defense played really well in this game.
Especially against the run, right?
Yeah, every time they handed off to Anderson, there was basically two guys on him every time. They were really good. I thought Jamie Collins continues just to look just a fantastic player.
Beast.
I wanted to point that out. You mentioned already Brady being the top rusher for the Patriots, and that's obviously a big problem going forward for them.
Mm-hmm.
Can
we mention watching Peyton Manning run in the third quarter for a first down took him, I'm pretty sure, 45 minutes to move 10 yards up the field. The entire time, I think you can see hardware falling out of his neck as he turns every yard. It was like, it was sort of like that scene in Forrest Gump where he's running with the leg gear on, except the leg gear never came off.
Oh, that's
amazing.
Analogy. Yeah.
I mean, it was probably the most entertaining run I've ever seen in my life. New England's defense definitely deserves credit. I mean, you know, even if this is old Peyton Manning and not the old Peyton Manning, you know, there's a lot of weapons on that offense. And they did a really, really good job holding all of them in check. You know, even at this stage in his career, you know, if Emmanuel Sanders or Demaryius Thomas are wide open, Peyton Manning can get the ball to him. Unlike the Patriots, Denver was trying to run a balanced offense. And New England did a terrific job shutting down the run, especially late in the game, where just a couple running first downs would seal it. Instead, it was like three and out, three and out, three and out. Denver had a bunch of possessions that were all like 30 seconds or less. I say, you know, we're talking about credit and blame. None of the blame goes on that Patriots defense. They did their job.
Absolutely. You know, at the start of the season, I wondered about them not picking up Darrell Revis again. But then when you see them play in the last couple of games, you can see that secondary is also it's really good. They're a good defense. Really,
it,
good.
It hurts me to say it, but man, Malcolm Butler is good.
Yes, he really is.
Yeah. He makes a couple bonehead plays, but he also, that last pass when he ran down and knocked that ball down, I don't know if you guys remember, it was like one of the last deep balls that he tried on the left. Incredible play. Like, that was an incredible stop. And you could just see he went all out to make that happen and pulled it off.
Do you guys know where Butler was he, where was he drafted?
I don't know.
No, I
don't. Malcolm Butler? What's his first name?
Wasn't he undrafted? Isn't that his whole story?
Really?
Let me see. Uh-huh. Can look it up real quick. Is it right?
I know he was going into last year before.
Undrafted free agent. Yeah, he's an undrafted free agent out of the University of West Alabama.
Yeah, and if people forget what I'm talking about, he is the one who made that interception on the goal line at the end of the Super Bowl last year that just absolutely crushed me for a good chunk of time.
Okay, Justin, we move on from Malcolm Butler pretty fast there, huh?
Yeah. and I don't want to be petty, but I do take a little bit of satisfaction in how this game ended. And Patriots fans, I know that feeling to be 2 yards away from where you need to be and have it all come just crumbling down in front of you at the end. It does not feel good. You have my sympathy. Could be worse, though. It's a little bit worse when it happens in the Super Bowl.
Sure.
For sure. And you guys deserve that win. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's true. The other big takeaway, of course, is going to be the Denver defense. Some of the play there, getting pressure on Brady. I mean, we've talked about his quick release, getting the ball out within a couple of seconds. The pressure they managed to get onto him, I thought it was, even though the offensive line's atrocious, I think Von Miller, hopefully doing it clean, but he was just brilliant. Just brilliant. Certainly the MVP of the game for me.
For sure, I totally agree.
Between him and Gronk, best players on the field.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Completely agree.
Go ahead.
No, I had one final takeaway, but let's just go with you first, then I can come back to that. It's a different point altogether.
Okay, yeah, I was just going to ask, with Peyton, do you think if Peyton wins or loses his Super Bowl, is this his last game? Is he done either way? Any thoughts on that? I just wanted to get a sense of, did you get a feeling that, like, because obviously he is, it's hard. Like, he is not doing this well. Like, when he lost 2 years ago to Seattle, where he just got blown out, he looked a lot better going into that game than he did today, in the sense of what he was physically capable of doing. So, I mean, what do you guys think? If you had to guess today, is he done? Where's Peyton at?
I think he's done enough in the last, two or three weeks when he came back, replaced Brock Osweiler. He came back. He did really well. I think he's enhanced his reputation also with tonight's game. I think he looked okay in a really tough defensive battle, and I think that's important for him. I fear they're going to get crushed by Carolina in the final, in the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But even then, I think walk away. enhanced your reputation, walk away and enjoy your retirement.
Totally. Go out on this as a champ. You beat the evil cheaters. Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I like that idea. And if he wins the Super Bowl, I think he should definitely retire. What do you think, Justin?
Yeah, I agree with you on both of those points. I'm definitely more of a Manning guy than a Brady guy. And I would love to see him go out on top. Even if he doesn't, though, it would probably feel good to go out knowing in the long battle of Brady versus Manning that Manning had the last laugh.
Yeah, totally. That's a great point.
What was the last thing you wanted to say, Neil? Anything else?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that controversy has followed the Patriots around for a number of years now, as we're all too acutely aware and no doubt very tired of. But in this game, I think what we came down to were two good teams fighting out, battling out for 60 minutes. And at the end of the game, no controversy. The best team just won in the end, and it was a good game for football. And I think that's important in the NFL these days.
Yeah, I thought it was a great game. I was on the edge of my seat that entire game. It was maybe my favorite game of the year. It was a very, very compelling game.
Justin, they were both of you settling down and settling in for overtime? I was.
I was pretty sure when he hit that touchdown to Gronk, I was pretty sure that was the harder thing, right? You're like, oh, he hit that. He's going to get these 2 yards. But it's an interesting thing. We started earlier. They didn't have a running game. And so you knew he had to throw it. And that's maybe all they needed to know to make sure that 2 yards didn't happen.
I had the feeling when he hit that 40-yard pass to Gronkowski and took it into the 10-yard line or something, I thought, uh-oh, here we go. It's going to be touchdown, two-point conversion, overtime, and something weird's going to happen.
Yeah, that was a brilliant play. Like, yeah, just to see Gronk go up and you see the safety hold for a second to see if he's going to cut, and then he just blows right by that safety. Really an impressive play right when they needed it.
Didn't he spend the entire game limping? He looked like he was limping all the time, Gronkowski.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't notice it the whole game, but I did notice a limp every once in a while. Did you see that, Justin? Did you notice he was...
No, you know, I didn't notice any particular limp. I wasn't really looking for it. I mean, it's kind of tough to tell at the end of a long season because everybody's so banged up if, you know, they're walking just kind of gingerly. Because you know, you just went through the grinder for so long, or if you actually do have a limp. Just a one quick final thing that I want to kind of point out on this game. We some of us do like to rag on New England a little bit, and you know, evil empire and all that.
Count me in.
It should be pointed out that at the end of the game, when the confetti is falling, a lot of players from New England went up and gave extended congratulations to Peyton Manning, and that seemed really genuine. There was kind of a long conversation between Bill Belichick and Peyton Manning right in the middle of the field. I think, you know, as much as we like to, poke a little fun, there's a lot of mutual respect there, and there were definitely some classy gestures on the part of New England.
Oh, that's another thing to point out. No, for sure, man. Sorry, Neil, what were you saying?
I think I think that's a really good point. I think there was certainly a lot of sportsmanship on the field at the end of the game. There was terrific,
yeah.
I do wish they would change this ceremony of presenting this little weird shaped football thing to the winning owner.
I can't say that I would take it away. It's the best thing that's ever happened to my team. We've never held a Lombardi, so that's the highest pinnacle we've reached. So I love that little trophy because that's like one of the happiest pictures that I have in my brain is Brian Dawkins holding up that strange little football-shaped thing. But I hear you. Yeah, that is a weird kind of – why do we make such a big deal of it when the Super Bowl's right around the corner, the really, really big deal.
I just want to continue my rant for a moment longer. It's like, okay, you won the semi-final. Good for you. It's like, well, we didn't have to win anything then, just the semi-final. I know they won the NFC, the AFC Championship and all the rest of it, but it's so much a semi-final weekend. It's
a bit like... Ultimately, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, it's a big, fancy Super Bowl participation ribbon, like whoop-de-woo-woo.
Yep. Yeah. And I wonder if it comes back from out of the day when the AFC was added to the NFC. And so, you know, for so long, the AFC was thought of as lesser. And so maybe just the idea of winning the NFC or the AFC was still valuable. I don't know. But now I think that the league is totally balanced. And maybe year by year it shifts, but usually it's pretty balanced. And, yeah, there's no reason to celebrate winning your conference nearly as much as there's to focus on that Super Bowl that's coming right up around the corner. I'm sure when Bill Belichick is celebrating his AFC championships, all his brain is thinking about is the next game. He's already over it. You know, we're on to Cincinnati. But
and every player, so, and every coach, and every fan.
Yeah, exactly. Right. There's no. Yeah, you would only watch if it's your team. And it, like for me, when we won it for the first time in my lifetime. Well, not really my lifetime. I was alive for '81, but I wasn't around. You know, really paying attention at 4 years old. But when we did it in 2004. Yeah, like I was probably on the edge of my seat watching it, but I know almost everyone else across the country, even most Eagles fans, are turning that off the second the game's over. Yeah. Justin, you mentioned something interesting. I just want to do a real quick tangent before we move on to the second game. You mentioned that Wade Phillips, right, is this great defensive mind and that he's was not a good head coach. I know this is going back to the Eagles, but I think this is common across. We just hired Jim Schwartz as our defensive coordinator, who's also, I think, a very good defensive coordinator, but a horrible head coach. And it made me start to think, and the Eagles literally were not looking. They didn't interview a single defensive-minded coach as a possibility for the head coaching job. And this idea started to come around in Philly of that head coaches, defensive coaches do not make good head coaches. What do you guys think of this? And is there anybody you guys that jumps to mind right away, especially that's coaching today, that is doing a really good job running a team and is more of a defensive mind than an offensive mind?
Yeah, Pete Carroll.
You think of Pete Carroll is defense over offense?
Oh, yeah. Anybody who is familiar with Pete Carroll knows that. The reason why every defensive coordinator who comes through becomes a head coach is because they're running Pete Carroll's defense. He's pretty hands-off with the offense. He lets Daryl Bevel run the offense, and it's his defense. His fingerprints are all over it. The scheme that they run is his, and it's been that way for his entire career. He came up as a defensive assistant. I mean, if there's one aspect of the Seahawks defense that everybody is familiar with, it's the defensive backs, the Legion of Boom. He was a defensive backs coach. That's his background. That's where he comes from. And he's definitely the first one that comes to mind for me. I think Rex Ryan is at times a good coach. he's definitely a defensive guy. Bill Belichick, if I'm not mistaken, is a defensive background. Yeah. Ron Rivera, I think, is a defensive guy as well.
Correct. Yeah.
I mean, it's definitely the minority. And I mean that's all I can really come up with. I think the prevailing strategy for a lot of owners is you get the big, sexy offensive mind, and then you plan to go get a good defensive coordinator. And I mean that's a legitimate way to do it. I think more often than not, it's easy to. There's a lot of really, really good defensive coordinators out there, and I don't know that I could name as many good offensive coordinators. And it could be that they're more personnel dependent, or it could be my own ignorance on the topic. But Wade Phillips is great. Jim Schwartz is great. Who else? Todd Bowles, who just became a head coach, is great. There's a lot of good defensive minds out there.
There's another factor there. I think whereby the poor teams, the really bad teams in the league, generally need a quarterback, and I think. Organizations sometimes look to having an offensive coordinator as your head coach because they're going to be bringing in a young quarterback and need to develop him. I think Tampa Bay is probably interesting.
As we see with McAdoo and Gase, you know, that these guys were the hot commodities were definitely these quarterback whisperers of sort were the main guys people were trying to hire in the offseason.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Because, I just thought it was an interesting argument when they were kind of saying this is why we didn't go out and look at any, you know, defensive coaches. And, I think all those are valid points. I just think it's interesting right now. I think offense is easier. The rules are so bent to help the offense. Offense is easier in NFL. And right now we're looking at, defenses win championships. The two teams that are going into the Super Bowl are arguably the best two defenses in the league. And so I just, I've always been a defensive minded person. And so, I just wanted to, check that out. See what your guys' thoughts were. Very, very interesting. Thank you. Justin, to go with the Seahawks.
Just add one thing to
Go ahead, buddy.
Just wanted to say that since this is the Philadelphia Eagles podcast, I would add that Jim Schwartz, I think you've got a really, really good coach, defensive coach there. Excellent.
Yeah, I think he'll do a good job. He's a total jerk, but I think he's going to be a good coach. That moment he had with Harbaugh after that game is like one of my least favorite moments I've seen out of coaches. Just totally bad for both of them. I just like bad behavior, boys. Bad behavior. But
that
so
is
I've
all
had
Harbaugh's fault.
You think so?
To be outsmarted by Harbaugh is
oh my god! if you want this to turn into the Rag on Harbaugh podcast, you have got the right guy.
But yeah, I just thought it was I'm excited about Schwartz. He's the only signing I'm excited about, and hopefully our defense will be stronger. But it is not the Eagles podcast. We should move on. But today it is Patriots fans. So let's moving on, Justin, to the game you watched in the NFC. Not as exciting of a game. Obviously, this game right from the beginning really felt one-sided. But what was interesting was you watched this game, Justin. What did you see that you found fascinating?
Well, I mean, the biggest thing, and it surprised me how severe it was, but my goodness, did they put a Carson Palmer jersey on Brian Hoyer and shove him in the game? That was the most atrocious playoff quarterback performance I think I have ever seen. I mean,
why do you think it happened?
So historically, Carson Palmer does not play well in the playoffs. He just doesn't. Going back to Simon Cincinnati when they went pretty much every year and were one and done. I don't know if it's an issue of nerves, of jitters, or what, but he has never been an effective playoff quarterback. And I think you saw that during last week's game. We kind of talked about it a little bit then, how he'd been on this just insane pace for all year and then really kind of came down to earth. You know, I feel like the announcers tried to explain it away with his finger. I don't think that had anything to do with it. I mean, you know, he had four interceptions. He lost two fumbles. That's hard to do on purpose. Like, what are you talking about? Of course your team gets blown out when your quarterback does that. And, you know, if your team is predicated on the deep pass, and every time the ball comes out of his hands, everybody in the stadium is holding their breath because they don't know, into what jersey it's going to bury itself, that's a serious problem.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, one of the worst safeties we had was Kurt Coleman. He's doing great on that defense, don't get me wrong, but that is not he's not an amazing player. And the fact that he picked one of those balls off, I was just like, wow, Kurt Coleman just picked a ball off in the NFC Championship game. That's, very surprising to me. He's not big, nor fast, nor very talented. But go ahead.
Coleman had two picks, I think, on the night.
He had two?
So I think he had two. Didn't he have one at the end when he got the face mask and dragged in the end zone? Was not your second?
Yeah, you're right. I thought he only had the one. That's fascinating. Yeah, so we had two. Yeah, just that surprises me. I just don't think of Kirk Coleman, not Dawkins, he's a journeyman kind of safety. And yeah, he's not the star, obviously, of that team by any means. And yeah, man, crazy. But I think that the point of that defense. Go ahead.
I was going to say, Justin hits on a great point there about Palmer and being nervous. If you look at the matchup there, you've got Palmer, who's obviously a talented guy. I think he was a number one overall pick, wasn't he, back in the day? And he was throwing to you'd have to say, the superior wide receiver unit, with Floyd, Fitzgerald, Brown, against the Panthers secondary, who are, I think they're down two starters. I think it's Josh Norman and the rest. And yet they still couldn't get that passing game going. I think you hit on the head with his nerves. I think that was, he looked really nervous. Forget the finger bit.
I haven't seen all 22 yet. Oh, go ahead.
So here's kind of a funny stat from the game. So Carson Palmer was 23 of 40, had a passer rating of 43. Larry Fitzgerald was 0 for 1, had a passer rating of 40. So at 0 for 1, Larry Fitzgerald was almost as good a passer as Carson Palmer. That is not a winning formula.
And he got a good arm, Fitzgerald. That was a nice throw he put out there.
Oh yeah, I would love to see him really hook it up. I'll bet he's actually got a great arm on him.
Was there, if this game had been played again, is there any way that Carolina could, that the Cardinals could ever win this game, or is it just a given that Carolina is the better team?
Depends. Are they playing in the regular season or the postseason? Because I think that makes a huge difference. In the postseason, no, the Cardinals do not win this game. I don't see any way that they do from what we saw. You know, it's, you know, just to pull back the curtain a little bit, a lot of us, when the games are going on, we're all kind of messaging each other, kind of keeping in contact. One of the things that I mentioned going into halftime is that I don't see the Cardinals being able to put on a Seahawks-like run in the second half. I don't think it's their makeup. I don't think they have the mental toughness. And this isn't me trying to kind of toot the Seahawks horn. I just don't think they're built that way. I think they're I thought that they were going to fold in the second half. And, oh, my goodness, did they in a big way. You know, the Seahawks, for better or worse, you know, always think that not only do they have a chance to win, that they're going to win, to the point to where they're a little crazy. And, you know, it's one of the things we love about them. The Cardinals, I mean, you know, it by halfway through the third quarter, it looks like they were just phoning it in. I mean, it looked like they were done and they just wanted to go home.
Yeah. And I wonder if it's an age thing. You know, you think of the energy of Cam, and he's so young and so talented and rising. And this other team with people like Larry and Palmer, where they're old and they're tired, and it's got to be harder for them than it is for Cam. You know, you're looking at literally more than a decade probably between those men, you know, and their ages. Yeah, very interesting. For you to say, to use the word tired, I think of that team as old and tired in a way. Maybe not as old and tired as Peyton's neck, but pretty old and pretty tired. I haven't seen the All-22 yet. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think there's a psychological thing going on there in that game tonight where, you know, they lost Tyrann Mathieu, what, 2 or 3 weeks ago? And he was such an energy, such a force in that in that entire team, I think, and you know, missed him badly. And if you compare the two quarterbacks, you've got Palmer, who looked... Well, he looked frozen to the spot, really, and like a rabbit in the headlights, we would say over here. Whereas Cam Newton, whether you like him or dislike him, and always all that he brings with him, he's lapping up the playoffs like they're a bowl of milk. It's just incredible.
Mm-hmm. No, it's incredible. I mean, this, all of the teams in the playoffs, no one has been doing what the Panthers are doing. I mean, they are literally just blowing teams out and just dominating. And I think the NFC is tougher than the AFC. I think it's going to be very hard for Denver to keep up. Did anybody notice what Carolina was doing to shut down the Arizona pass attack? Were they playing in man and just able to man up? Were they playing in like a cover two? Were they playing in a shell? Like a cover four? Like, what were they doing? Does anybody picking up on what their tactic was to shut down that Cardinals passing game?
Well, for a lot of the game, they were Norman was going man on man with Floyd. I don't think. Well, I may be wrong towards the end there, but I don't think he had a meaningful catch in the game.
Wow.
And otherwise, they didn't appear to blitz an awful lot during the game, just the occasional occasional blitz. So it looks like most guys were just dropping back and sitting there waiting.
And they have those linebackers. I mean, to have Norman and those two linebackers, the coverage they can accomplish is really impressive. Because not only do you have Norman to take away the best weapon, but then you have the middle of the field is well handled by those two linebackers. I just think that they shut things down. And especially you mentioned that comeback. You say that the Cardinals aren't built to do a comeback against Carolina. I don't know if many teams that could mount a comeback against that defense. They are just so stingy when it comes to points.
But you know that comeback.
Yes,
sorry,
and
Justin.
No. I mean, so here's the where I'll disagree with you a little bit, especially with the injuries they have right now. They are weak on the back end. You know, a team that can air it out can do phenomenal things against Carolina. The problem, and you know, that's how the Cardinals' offense is built to work. The problem is early in the game, the Cardinals' defensive line was just. The Carolina defensive line was just whipping the Cardinals. I mean, just absolutely mashing them. You know, at a certain point, I was starting to get kind of mad at Bruce Arians for not keeping the tight ends in to block more instead of always running them out on routes. And so what ended up happening is the Cardinals, who like to do a lot of 5 and 7 step drops, could not execute that and couldn't take advantage of the weakness at the back end of the secondary. So, when you can't attack their weakness, you have to go right into their teeth, which is what ended up happening for the rest of the game. And it was bad news, because then all of a sudden you're trying to throw over the middle within, somewhere between the hash marks where Luke Kuechly is roaming. That's a bad idea. I don't care what team you are. Or you're throwing it to the outside where the corners can use the sidelines and make breaks on the ball. And you saw the results, some interceptions because he was hit so much. Carson Palmer was clearly rattled. He was bouncing passes to wide open receivers. Larry Fitzgerald had like the third drop of his career or some stupid number like that at one point. Once that kind of starts to happen, the Cardinals just aren't built to come back from that.
What were you saying?
The pressure that Carolina puts on that offensive line of Arizona, especially up the middle. I mean, you're right. Kawan Short is just, wow, he's just, what a talent he is. And put him next to star Lutaleli, and it's that pressure up the middle. I know we're going to speak about I'll start looking at the matchup later for the Super Bowl, but I do not like to think of Short and Lutaleli spying Manning across from center. They're going to crush him. They really are.
As we're moving towards that, is there much else we want to say about this Panthers Cardinals game?
Yeah,
into the Super Bowl.
We've been talking a lot about what the Cardinals did wrong, and I do want to mention a few things that Carolina does right, and kind of my observations for why they sort of play the way that they do. If you look, they definitely have a history of starting games strong and doing really well early in the game, and a lot of that has to do with sort of how their run game is constructed. They have a very, very complex run game. They utilize a lot of pulling linemen, a lot of traps, a lot of counter plays, and for a lot of teams, just seeing it in scout team during the week isn't enough. You have to see it a bunch before you start to get a feel for it. And what ends up happening is Carolina is incredibly successful early in that game, early in a lot of games with their run game, which starts to open up things for the passing game. And I think that was the case here. That complexity is really, really difficult for a defense to wrap its head around. Add to that, when they were airing it out, the Cardinals have a good secondary, not as good without Matthew, but they do have a really good secondary. But I thought Patrick Peterson was just flat out beat a couple of times. He had one holding call that I thought should have been pass interference because he basically pulled the guy down when he was streaking past him. A lot of that was Corey Brown, a name we don't talk about a lot, had a great game. He had that 186-yarder. I think he was the one who was kind of pulled down by the coattails on that one. On the Carolina offense, which pretty much firing on all cylinders all day. And a lot of that was Cam Newton, but a lot of it was the whole team. I mean, I think, all 11 on offense played a really, really excellent game, and they deserve a lot of credit for that.
I think there's a couple of points I'd like to add there. The word that comes to mind when you watch them run the ball is patience. They have just Jonathan Stewart and just fantastic patience to wait for the holes to open up, to wait for the lane to come out. Excellent. Really, really, really impressive to watch that. And you're right, the complexity of it is terrific. Sometimes they've got three options to run the ball there in plays, and it's a joy to watch. And, of course, they are running the guy who's 6'6" and, what is he, 250, 260,
yeah.
Cam Newton. And that makes a huge difference when you're running these kind of read option plays. It's because he's such a serious, serious threat. I've had to sit and watch Robert Griffin III slowly getting decapitated year on year when he tries to do those running plays every game. And with Newton, defensive linemen are just bouncing right off him. And it's quite a sight. I think you're right, Justin. Fantastic.
Yeah, at one point he was standing next to Luke Kuechly, all world inside linebacker, and he made him look small. Like, he made Luke Kuechly, one of the best linebackers that I have ever seen, look like a tiny human being. It's incredible how big this guy is, but he throws like an elite quarterback. So it's a really difficult thing for defenses to deal with.
Yeah. His passing accuracy is improving. No, I mean, it looks like it's improving. And some of those some of those throws, especially down the middle when it's Olsen or so, those passes are just as good as anybody in the league.
One thing I alluded to last week that I think occurred this week as well is Cam Newton early in games really likes to mess around with the snap count. He likes to play with the hard count, and you saw him get Calais Campbell a couple of times. And in doing so, he didn't let the Cardinals defensive line get off to a fast start, and really helped his offensive line. That's the sort of thing that you typically expect to see in your Manning, in your Rodgers, Brady, Brees, like those kind of veteran elder statesman quarterback. It's a very, very mature part of the game that takes development that you don't typically do at the collegiate level. And Cam Newton is doing a tremendous job with this kind of more subtle sort of soft aspect of the quarterback game.
Yeah, reading the defense in front of him has been a huge improvement in the last couple of years for him. Absolutely agree.
Yeah, and the shift you see, I mean, he is obviously one of the few running quarterbacks that is pulling that off. I mean, the way they use him as a running threat is unparalleled. And on top of that, he's now figuring out the pocket. And when those two things come together, I mean, he's unstoppable. It's really interesting. It's very similar to Russell Wilson. And I just think it's fascinating. We have two quarterbacks that can run that style of offense, like a read option, those kind of things. And they do it totally differently. And they're both total freaks that are able to do these things that no other humans on earth can do. And I just think it's funny when you hear things like with Chip Kelly and different coaches where they're like, oh, they need a read option guy. And you're like, there's only two men on earth who can do that right now. That's like the hard, like I used to get freaked out when people needed to find a nose tackle. Like big fat guys are easier to find than this. Like this is maybe the hardest thing to find. If your offense needs you to have a guy like Cam Newton or Russell Wilson, I don't know what you do, because they're so rare and they're so powerful when you can find them. But I just, hats off to both of those two players. Just really remarkable what they're pulling off. Anything else on this game before we move on to a little bit of Super Bowl talk?
Yeah, I have two things, if that's okay.
No,
first
totally.
Of all, I would say I'm not sure who the GM is for the Panthers, but he deserves a gold medal for his performance in putting that squad together, because that roster together, because it's outstanding, and they have some really, really top players there in that squad, and not necessarily the first round picks. He's done just a fantastic job. And secondly, I would say we probably have done this part of the program in two words: seven turnovers. That's it.
Unreal. Incredible.
You just don't win with seven turnovers.
And so the last thing that I want to add is I will never ever get tired of watching Mike Tolbert run with the football. That might be the most entertaining thing you can see in the entire NFL. Just like, because he's this weird combination of like this fat big butted little guy gets low, but like actually moves, is actually agile on his feet. Oh man, I could watch him run the football all day long.
He looks like the sort of player who takes the ball, tucks it under his jersey, and then starts running. Because you never see the ball. Like bowling ball.
Yeah. I love your sentiment, Neil, there about the GM. You're hitting it right on the head. No one expected. You know that the GM has done a good job when before the season, no one thinks your team is going to go anywhere, that your team is totally doomed because you have no offensive weapons, and then you end up going 15-1 and you're on your way to the Super Bowl, that you see a roster that was much better than anyone knew. And I'm sure people in that building knew, and clearly the GM knew what he had. But that's an incredible feat, big team. So are they just going to steamroll the Super Bowl?
If you look at their first, sorry, just to go back to the general manager, if you look at their first two picks in the draft this year, I think it was Devin Funchess, then Shaq Thompson, or maybe the other way around, maybe it was Shaq Thompson, yeah, I think it was a linebacker, and then the wide receiver. And really, throughout the season, they didn't do a great deal. They were in and out of the lineup, and bits, pieces here and there. But you look, this is the championship game. Who catches a touchdown in a crucial moment? Devin Funchess. Who comes in when Thomas Davis is injured? They bring in the linebacker. Terrific.
Yeah, no, totally. And Shaq was one of my favorite players out of the draft last year. That guy is a football player. Like when I saw him, he was a weird position because they didn't know exactly how they were going to use him in the NFL. But he will eventually grow up and be a great player. They're just going to figure out how to use him. He's got such great football instincts. Moving into this final game now is...
Sorry, Mark, I keep going on and on. I was just wondering, do you think there's an off-season discussion to be had on this podcast about the change in linebackers in the NFL in line with the sort of more pass-catching tight ends and more offensive throwing the ball? Because you're seeing these guys who come in now who are slightly undersized at linebacker, and you've got, I think Arizona had a player today who had moved to linebacker and was originally a defensive back, about 210 pounds. And I'm wondering if that's something that's going to be a general trend, maybe something we can ask the M-Dub.
Yeah, that's interesting, especially you bring up, I mean, the guy who was missing from a game today, Jerod Mayo, is undersized, right? An incredible, incredible middle linebacker. And one of the first touchdown that they threw today was the middle linebacker that was in place of him wasn't able to drop back the way that you need to in order to cover the middle of the field. And so, yeah, I think you bring up a great point. I think this is the same pressure. We're seeing it both on the linebacker and the safety, right? A whole new style of play needs to come out of both of these positions. Because, yes, you still need to be able to be tough and get to where you need to be and get somebody down. But now you've got to cover somebody like Gronk or cover somebody like, you know, Jordan Reed or some of these guys. Truly, truly challenging. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that the days of the big guys who are 260 and 6'4", that's really hard to find the athleticism you need in a guy that size these days.
Yeah, you know, I think Shaq Thompson is kind of the new prototype. Keep in mind that, you know, he, you know, UW, go Huskies, he was a All-American safety, but he was a little oversized for the position. And they played him in a bunch of positions, you know.
I forget the name of the word, right?
And, you know, he's just a football player. And so, you know, converting him into a linebacker, and, you know, there was kind of a learning curve because we both had to get used to the speed of the NFL and kind of playing the linebacker position full time. And I think he really came on at the end of the season, and I think he has a tremendous future ahead of him. I think if you look at another player that I know really well, you know, Cam Chancellor on most any other team would probably be a linebacker as well, rather than a safety because of his size and his ability to hit and stop the run. And, you know, his coverage skills would be used more in that way. I think that just as sort of a natural counter to the evolution of the tight end position, you're going to see more and more of these kind of hybrid tweener linebackers.
Mm-hmm. I think Tyrann Mathieu for Arizona, before he was injured, I'm almost certain he played something like 45% of his snaps were at linebacker.
Oh, wow.
I know he played a lot of corner. He spent a lot of time there as well.
I don't know. I don't have his stuff in front of me.
Yeah, he definitely played all over the place.
But it's still a transition.
Yeah, totally. You know, just like, yeah, it's almost like the middle of the field is becoming like more flexible and more similar in a way. Like what between a linebacker and a safety is changing. They're becoming more similar, it's not that they're morphing. It's that they have to be able to do what both of those positions used to be able to do, which is really difficult. I mean, it's just really challenging what you have to find in the middle of the field. But it's hard to find those amazing tight ends as well. That's a freakish body and an athlete to do that. But we're seeing a lot of them. I mean, they seem to be coming up every year. There's at least one or two of them in the draft. So I think we're seeing that shift to be a permanent shift.
Yeah.
Is Carolina just going to roll? Does Denver have any kind of a chance? Or would either of you back Denver for the Super Bowl?
I was sitting there thinking, how is it going to be? And I thought back to the time when Washington, just to get my Washington shout in, when Washington won the Super Bowl and we absolutely spanked Denver back in the day. And I think Denver lost heavily to San Francisco as well back in the day in a Super Bowl. I can see Denver getting a good old Denver spanking.
Mm. And obviously Seattle really turned them down 2 years ago.
Yeah, let me go ahead and go out on a limb and say I will take Denver in this game.
Wow, nice. So if Denver wins it, tell me how that goes down, Justin. How would they do it?
You know, it's a couple of things. I do not anticipate the Broncos turning the ball over six times. So let's start with that. And that in and of itself is going to make a huge difference. I think Denver's defense is phenomenal. I think that for much of the year, you can make the case that they were the best defense in the league. I really think they were that good. And I think they match up pretty well. I think their defensive line simply beats Carolina's offensive line. When it comes to pressuring a quarterback, like, your old pocket passers, usually you look for that kind of interior pressure. But for these more running quarterbacks, and I know because we've got one, the outside pressure, guys coming off the edge, tends to be a little bit more effective, because a lot of times these guys are looking to escape to the outside, run and either make a play with their feet or run to set up the pass. And so when you have guys like Von Miller streaming around the edge, and Von Miller is fast enough to track down Cam Newton, I think that they'll be able to slow down this offense, not stop it, but slow it down. And I think largely take away their two biggest strengths, which is their running game and the ability of Cam Newton to sort of dominate the game on his own. On the flip side, I think that the Denver offensive line is good enough to not get embarrassed and to give Peyton Manning some time to kind of hit those intermediate throws kind of in the seams. And I think that they'll be able to move the ball. If Denver wins the game, it's a close game. If the game is a blowout, it's a Panthers blowout. I think those are the two most likely outcomes, is a close Denver win or an absolute shellacking with Carolina hosting the trophy. But I'm putting my money on the close Denver victory.
Nice. That'd be great for Peyton. I think there's good things there. Cam will have more chances. I like your enthusiasm there and your confidence. I agree with you. I think if they could do what they did today, where they get ahead and then never relinquish the lead, they can beat Carolina, because Carolina is not going to be a team that can really throw up a lot of points when they need to. Like, they don't have the passing attack to kind of, like, if they do get behind, to throw up two scores in a row. I think you can hold Carolina behind that. I don't want to say that, because Carolina has pulled off amazing things all year, but I do think that's true. They are not even the Cardinals, a team that's built to throw the ball down the field. They are really like a kind of pounding team, and if their defense shuts you down, they're going to score a lot of points. So yeah, very interesting. Neil, do you have anything you want to say about the game before we close off?
Yeah, I think Justin makes good points there. In the perfect world, where everything goes right for Denver, I wonder how they're going to cover Olsen. I thought T.J. Ward and all the linebackers had a pretty rough outing with Gronk tonight, and I could see Olsen doing really well. I agree with the outside pass rush. Trying to keep Cam in the pocket will be probably a good thing, but he'll probably just run up the middle anyway. I do wonder, Manning is not the... We saw him tonight. He couldn't, when he was under pressure, he couldn't turn around and throw the ball out of bounds. He had to run backwards and he got flattened. And I do wonder how he's going to cope with a bit of pressure and a couple of Kuechly blitzes and our two defensive linemen coming up the middle at him.
I will tell you exactly how Peyton Manning will deal with interior pressure. He will look like a giraffe that just got hit by a tranquilizer dart and just fall over on his side.
maybe he'll do his he'll fill them with a few fake sacks and stand up and throw the ball.
we learned tonight you cannot underestimate Peyton Manning as a running quarterback. Maybe he'll reinvent himself.
Well, thank you guys so much. This was a fun show. We should close off now. We've just capped over an hour. So we are next fan up. Again, thank you so much, all of the fans that are listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to reach out to us, you can find us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can reach us on Facebook just typing in Next Fan Up. Yes, thank you guys both for being here, Neil and Justin. I really appreciate it. And with that, we will see you all later this week. We're going to have a bunch of shows actually coming up between now and the Super Bowl. Most of the other teams are already focused on the postseason, so we got lots to talk about with all the coaching changes and with free agency and the draft. And, I mean, it's all already happening. The NFL is a year-round endeavor. So please join us. We'll be having shows this week and next week as we lead up to the Super Bowl. Pod Vader does midweek shows. I do the Sunday night shows. Please reach out to us. We would love to hear from you. Let us know how we're doing. And
we're on to Cincinnati.
No, you're not, Bill. No, you're not.